This is Soft Power Radio on KWNK 97.7 LPFM. This week marks a year, for most of us, of living a COVID life. One feature of this strange existence has been monotony, repetition. In our conversations with each other, the virus challenges us to defy its overwhelming power of replication. We talk about COVID and somehow always end up saying the same things, as if the virus is contagious in any form, even as a topic of discussion. Whether or not the global scope of the pandemic has brought people into greater solidarity with one another, and that remains to be seen, it has certainly created a kind of automatic connection that just didn't exist before. Start chatting with someone 10,000 miles away, and you'll almost certainly discover that from about mid-2020 to now, you've been leading similar lives. Today, we are checking in with Eric in Japan, Esther in Berlin, Marta in London, and Tony in Mexico City. You might remember them from our conversations in July of last year, when we spoke to them to get a sense of what the pandemic, still relatively fresh at that point, felt like around the world. Let's catch up and hear how the pandemic, no longer fresh but still very real, feels like 8 months later.
My name is Eric Matarese, and I am from Los Angeles, but I currently live in Nara, Japan. And I live in a small village at the moment. I'll be moving soon. I don't know if that's related to this or that matters, but I'll be moving to the city next month. Actually, no, later this month.
And how many people live in the village, just to remind people who are listening?
So about 1,300 people. The average age is over 65 years old. And so it's kind of, you know, I think all of Japan has this kind of aging population issue where there aren't enough young people. There's in the more rural areas, all the young people go to the cities to work. It's just become an issue all across Japan, but especially in my village. I think we're supposed to like the word that they say is like our village is due to go extinct next, so to speak, like maybe merge with another neighboring city or something like that. We have a very elderly population, and so that's been a thing that we've been worried about with COVID, of course. But last time we spoke, I think I mentioned how nobody wants to be number one in my village. Nobody wants to be the person that brought it here, the first case in our village, because then there's going to be that stigma. They're going to be, they're the one that brought it here, type of a thing. And so I think that has driven a lot of safety. Like personally, I don't want to get it regardless. You do think about that. What if somebody I knew, that kind of a thing.
So you guys have not had a single case yet in the village.
Our village has not had a reported case yet. There are, I think our village and one other village in Nara haven't had a reported case, but our neighbors have. One of the things that my younger friends in this village, she's older than me, but we have like late 30s, which is in this village is young, which is still good. But one of the things that she, you know, has talked about, and she actually told our mayor, was you can't just, because like we get this, like we have a speaker, every house in this village has a speaker, and the local government sends, like they tell us information through the speaker, kind of like Big Brother or whatever, they send the village information. I think the older generation likes that. Younger generation, we like things written, printed, uploaded or whatever, but Either way, they all, so in that speaker, they always tell us to just be careful, and please don't make any unnecessary trips out to the city that you don't need to, type of a thing. And my friend, who, yeah, she's like 38, 39, she's gotten very frustrated with that kind of government message every day, because like it would come every day. And I was getting sick of it too. I'm like, it's like, you know, we heard it yesterday, we don't need to hear it today, type of thing. So, but like what she told our mayor was like, you know, how about when you guys say that, instead of just saying, don't make any unnecessary trips, remind everybody that even if they get it, or like even if somebody, you know, like even if somebody gets it, that we all have to kind of take care of each other and support each other, and type of a thing, that it's not just, I think for her, she was feeling like the pressure of not getting it was too high relative to how easy it is to get. It really is something that, you know, somebody could have done nothing wrong in their own. They could have been as safe as they possibly could, and still they could get it. So,
the concern being that if somebody did get it, then there would be maybe like enough stigma attached to it that it would maybe even make it harder for them to like, yeah, maybe like they would then be dealing with that on top of the virus.
Oh yeah. Oh, there have been cases across Japan of the one person in a village, like, or like one of two people in a village that got it. I think maybe they faced some violence, or I think there was a suicide. I'm not sure. I feel like that I heard of a suicide of in a faraway prefecture, which, yeah, just in this, yeah, we, because I think, yeah, it is very, there's a huge stigma attached to it. But it's, yeah, just reminding everybody to try to, you know, support one another. They did change how they said it, and they said, yeah, just be careful and remember that we need to support one another in this difficult time.
I'm Tony, and I'm living in Mexico City, Mexico. And I currently am a English teacher, teaching English to adults and also to young children online, of course. So things are still kind of as they were when we last chatted. We kind of went on our second lockdown, and so the city was pretty much a ghost town. I live in a neighborhood that's really touristy, and so it was really noticeable because the streets were quiet and empty.
Kind of second lockdown, did that happen in the fall, or what, when did that happen?
Happened in like right before Christmas, like, you know, because Mexico is a big Catholic country, so Christmas is huge, and New Year's, and you celebrate for like weeks on end, and gathering with family is a huge thing. So the city went on lockdown trying to like deter people from social gatherings, even at home, you know, and so restaurants were shut down, bars, and then they do this thing here, and that's, it's still going on, where every other weekend, depending on the like essentially the county you live in, it's a dry weekend, like you can't buy any alcohol. But now the city's kind of reopened. I think we were on lockdown for a few months, and now it's basically like, it feels the same. It feels like normal life, except for people can't eat inside of restaurants. So it's kind of hectic because now like streets are taken over by tables and chairs. And when you're walking, like I have a dog, so I walk my dog 3 times a day. There's like just a bunch of people, crowds essentially in on the sidewalks. And so for me, it feels really stressful, just because there's like, even the outside space is now extra crowded. And I went out to my first restaurant yesterday, which is the first time in about a year. Like I'll order food to go or call Uber Eats. I make a ton of food at home, but yesterday was the first time I ate at a restaurant, and it was because I wasn't in the city. I was 3 hours away in Querétaro, which is it's a city, but it's very small comparatively. And the way that city is designed, one, because of the space and less population, they have like classic Mexican architecture where there's just these giant patios in every restaurant and building. And so there's naturally outside sitting space. And so it was a Tuesday afternoon. So nobody was around anyways, because people were at work or whatever. And so I ate because there was only one other person in the patio. And that was the first time in a year. Here now that I'm back in the city, I'm not eating out at restaurants. It scares me still. And I don't invite people over to my home still. And I don't go into people's homes, and I don't actually see people very often. My birthday's coming up, and which would mark 1 year from actually the day that Trump announced this national, emergency and toilet paper started disappearing in the US. People are like, what are you going to do for your birthday? And I'm just like, nothing. Like it's still an ongoing thing. Like maybe it doesn't feel as scary because we've been living with it, but the reality is not changed. Like, people are still dying. And hospital beds are still full, and, majority of the world population is not vaccinated. I actually feel personally more worried now than I even did maybe back then, because of how lax people are getting. And I get people are tired and they miss their friends and they want to hang out, but also hanging out kind of sucks. Like you can't hug each other. Like you try not to laugh too hard. Like you like wear a mask. I luckily live in a place where the climate's always pretty kind. Like I can't imagine in the winter time, like in Reno. But like, it's not that fun. Like it feels kind of, and there's always like this thought in the back of your mind that's like, oh man, like, what's that person's definition of safe? Is it like mine, or do they mess up somewhere today and like expose themselves? And it's not fun. So I kind of don't bother. And in my case, I'm lucky enough to work from home. So I really am quarantined. Like I don't see people. And it's weird socially how that's changed into even like, I don't even talk to people or call people or text people. Like all communication kind of has ceased, and like my dog and I are like a team, like it's like, and I go out 3 times a day for sure, because I walk him, and I go running, but always with this feeling of like, is that okay? Cause I don't wear my mask when I run. And it's like, I pass someone on the sidewalk and I'm like, oh my God, is that bad? Like, it's always just this thing in my mind. And so I suppose I might be in the category of like paranoid, for sure. But like the reality is the sickness. I've known people have gotten COVID who've been like, it's just like the flu, no big deal. Other people like, it's just like a common cold, no big deal. And then other people who are like, man, I was down and out for like 3 weeks, and 6 months later, I still can't smell or taste. And then there's people that just straight up die. And I've known people, all of those categories firsthand at this point in the COVID story. Like it's like, before all those things were like, oh, I read in the news or somebody. And now it's like, no, like, for real. Like I know all these kinds of people with these situations. And so, yeah, I feel like I just have to do my part, because I feel like a lot of people aren't, like they're treating it like no big deal. Stop it.
another one just the other day, a special new band. I don't remember lying, I don't remember lying, I don't remember a word, but I don't care, I care, I really don't care. Did you see the drummer's head?
That was Cut Your Hair by Pavement. You are listening to KWNK 97.7 LPFM in Reno, Nevada. Today, we are in conversation with four people living around the world, reflecting on a year of COVID.
My name is Esther Samuels-Davis, and I've been living in Berlin, Germany since 2013, and I'm an illustrator.
So last time we talked was in July, at which point, probably just like here, things weren't so crazy over there. You know, just broad strokes, sort of like if you can kind of fill us in on what the general trajectory of kind of COVID stuff was in Berlin and in Germany, sort of from July till now.
From July till now. It, like you said, the summer was really calm. And I think we all got little by little really like loose about meeting outside. And there were a couple parties that I went to inside, not like party parties, but like a group of like 10 friends or something, just hanging out and having a couple beers kind of party, not like dancing parties, but that a couple times. There were the protests. So those were some other like big outdoor gatherings. I remember when we went to those, it was kind of like, whoa, this is the first time we're like in a group of a bunch of people in a while. Like, so, and I remember that was the first time someone like touched my arm who was a stranger. And I remember being like, whoa, someone touched my arm who I don't know. And then being like, I remember a time when that wasn't at all strange, like 2 months ago, you know, that was really bizarre. And then we, a group of friends and I, we had organized our first scene fest, like small publishing book festival I guess that was 2019. So we decided to do it again last year. So we did that, I think it was the end of August when we did that. But we had it outside and it was all with masks. So, and it was pretty stressful. I was really, at the time there were a lot of protests, like anti-mask protests in Berlin. And I was really paranoid because we made people wear masks coming in. I was really paranoid that we were gonna get a lot of pushback. And being that we were kind of just this, you know, it's like five of us running this small little festival in a back garden. You know, we don't have security. So it was like a little scary. But luckily it was okay. We had like sign-in sheets and only a couple people were like kind of annoying about not wearing a mask, but most people were really cool about it. So that was the end of August. And then beginning of September, like right the next weekend, I actually went on a bus and went to Hamburg to go to another zine fest with a friend of mine. And we like stayed in someone's house, like a stranger, or for me, stranger, like my friend knew him. And the zine fest was there, they held it inside. And because it was inside, the organizers had had to build like entire like see-through clear like windows for everyone on their tables, and we had to wear masks the whole time. And they also had to like regulate how many people were allowed in per hour, and it was something like 40 people an hour or something. So we stayed there like 12 hours a day, and you'd see like, and we were at the end of the hall, like our table was in like the last hall you could go through. So it felt like one person every 10 minutes coming in. And it was just like, man, I can really feel like, I don't know. Some part of me was like, I'm really glad that people are still doing stuff, but it almost felt like some reasons was like, maybe we can just take a break because this is like really challenging. But it was fun to meet people and that was cool. And then I feel like from then on, things started getting worse and worse in Berlin. And it was funny, like that was this funny peak of like looseness for me where I was like, whoa, I can't believe I'm like okay staying in this person's house and I feel kind of irresponsible, but I'm still doing it. And it was weird, but I was still okay. And now it's like, feels so different. And yeah, for the next couple months, then in November, like things started getting a lot worse here for the first time really, because it hadn't been that bad here. And we started kind of experiencing a lot of the same problems, like, you know, hospitals filling up and then I started hearing about more like people closer to me getting it, like a really good friend of mine, got it and then told and lost his sense of taste for a while as well, and had the like shortness. He had all the symptoms that you like hear about on the news basically. Yeah, so it started becoming a lot closer and a lot more real. And then we had I think it was like a light lockdown in November. So they said anyone who can work from home should. So that's when I stopped going to the studio that I rent and started working from home. And then I've just been working from home since then. And I do go in once in a while, but I just make sure I wear a mask the whole time. And more like the rules started getting kind of stricter and stricter. And it went from like, you could meet with this many people indoors to like, now we can only see one person. Like it used to be like one household could meet another household, I think. I can't quite remember all of the like iterations of it, how it developed, but then it went to like only one person from one household can meet like another person basically. And then it became, it's the whole time it's been mandatory to wear masks in like stores. But then that's now it's like, it's mandatory to wear them in certain, on certain streets that are busy, you have to wear them too. Which is fine.
I think you mentioned before too, that, there's like the rules about what kind of mask you have to wear, right? Cause that's definitely something that we don't really have here.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Yeah. That was like this whole drama that I may have told you, about, we need to wear I guess it's the N95. Cause here it's called like FFP2 or something, but I think it's like the same exact thing. I think you can wear like N95 or FFP2, but it's really funny because you can also just wear the blue disposable masks. So it doesn't, but you're not allowed to like wear just cloth masks. And a lot of my friends that I was talking to were like, well, I felt like a lot more protected in the cloth masks, but they're not buying the I guess like fancier, or I don't know, the other, just the N95 like masks now. They're just buying the blue ones, so they feel like less protective. And we had these like cloth masks that are the viral protect ones, reusable ones, which are the, like have the same filter as the FFP2, but then we weren't allowed in the grocery store with them. And it was this whole like dramatic thing. And we tried to show them the, like on the website, how it says that they're certified, but they were like, no, it needs to, it's either the blue ones or the white ones. And then they were like, I can't read that. It's too small on your phone.
Are people upset that they spent like 6 months sewing their cloth masks and now they can't wear them?
I wonder, I don't know, you know, I haven't heard anyone. I was kind of sad because I've spent the whole time just wearing like whatever I find, like kind of like, I feel like my husband is more into this than I, or like in like his family will send him a thing like, oh, we should get this viral protect one or whatever. And then he's like, I'm just ordering these for us. And I'm like, okay. So it's like, I felt like the mask thing was kind of out of my, it just kept happening to me. And then everyone else was running around with these like cute little masks. And I always had the boring ones. And I was like, it's fine. They're great. They're like practical. It doesn't matter. But then a family member sent me this like beautiful, like hand embroidered mask that she made. And it was literally, I got it like the day after the regulation came out. And I was like, ah, my chance. Now I have this thing that I'll like literally never be able to use.
I'm Marta. I live in London, UK. I work in digital communications for the local London government. That's mostly what I do. Since July, it's weird because the whole country has gone on like multiple, like there's been so many changes since July. July feels like it was last century. Because at the point that we last spoke, they were just reopening. So there was it was at the point where new case numbers and hospitalizations and deaths, like all of these numbers were really low. So I think it was the 4th of July where like tons of stuff was reopening, and it was going to be like a whole big thing that like after months of lockdown, we're going to go and have a great time. Maybe not quite that, but like I remember being a bit shocked that like we're reopening, like, but like COVID is not over. We don't have a vaccine. Like we're only reopening because right now the cases are low. And I mean, things were still in play. Like social distancing was still in place, like wearing face masks. Like when I say reopening, like pubs and restaurants were open, but you could only go in a group of 6 people. And you know, you had to like sign in, they had like your number. So then if there was a case in that pub, then they would also then like notify everybody. Like there were like things in place to make everything like COVID secure. It was also the time when the government introduced this like program that now is like considered this like ultimately like this completely crazy thing. But at the time everybody was super excited about it, which was that to like stimulate the economy and to get people to go out and eat out. They what's it called? Eat out to help out. So it was like basically loads and loads and loads of places like pubs and restaurants where were getting refunded by the government for like half of the value. So apart from alcoholic drinks, which were not included, but all your food, you would pay half the price. So it was basically to get people to like go and be like, hey, you can like eat stuff out for half the price and the government will pay the other half. So the business is, so it's not like the business is taking a hit. But basically that meant that like, obviously loads of people were going everywhere. And even with like the COVID secure, even with the COVID secure measures and everything, obviously then contributed to numbers going up. And they were, I think they were just going up like kind of steadily. So there wasn't like a huge rise at one specific point. And then in September, schools reopened because schools had been closed basically since last March. Then like that whole time until the summer holidays, they were closed. So like kids who were at school and would have been going to school from March, just like never physically went back to school until September. And then I think it's clear, like on all of these graphs, that like the school reopening was then like the kind of the final thing where it just like really started going, and it like really started going up, where at that point, you know, I think in people's minds, like they were like, well, the government is paying us to go out and eat, so everything must be great. And then the kids started going to school where they're like, suddenly there was like so much mixing, and then like everything skyrocketed. And then they didn't actually introduce another lockdown until sometime in November. So like all throughout October, like all of this was just like going up and up and up and up. And the lockdown was only introduced at a point when it was like really bad. I can't remember the actual numbers, but it was nothing. Like whenever you see the curve, it's like there's like a rise in April and then it goes down. And then there's like a massive, massive, massive rise around yeah, like then it starts going up like August, September, and then October is just like, previously it would be like, oh shit, there's like a couple of thousand cases a day. And then suddenly we were in numbers that were like 20,000, 30,000, like really, really, really unmanageable stuff. And there was a lockdown for a month in November when they were like, okay, finally the government's doing something. But then as soon as lockdown ended the beginning of December, everybody was like, okay, Christmas shopping time, and now we have to stimulate the economy, you have to do your local businesses a favor and go and shop. And again, like I was a bit horrified because that also, like, I had to also like do some of these communications through work to be like how to shop safely and like, you know, supporting local businesses in London and stuff like that. I was just like, this is irresponsible. It is just irresponsible. I mean, it's probably true that like loads of businesses make like an absolute ton of money over Christmas, but then like, you know, should that be the argument for saying like, oh, we just went out of lockdown, but you know what, we're keeping shops open and you should go and shop. And then the government also came up with like a plan for Christmas that what they, because I think there was also a sense that like people will need to be able to meet and like multiple households will have to be able to meet. So they came up with this like plan to like basically remove tons of restrictions for like 5 days over Christmas. And it was going to be like, you can form a Christmas bubble with lots of other people to allow people to travel and to meet families and stuff. There was another like change of, I don't think they called it a lockdown at the time. I think they called it like, here's a, you know, it was like tier 1 to 3, we're introducing a tier 4 and now suddenly loads of places are in it because we're just losing control over how bad it is. And then they also canceled like the rules that they made up for Christmas. And it was all like within, you know, like 2 weeks or something. So I think like at that point, like I think half the people in the country didn't even know what the rules were because they were changing all the time. And it was such chaos. And so even if formally, I think on the 19th of December, so like just before Christmas, they announced all of these things that like Christmas bubbles are not going ahead, travel is not allowed, like all of that stuff. By then people were like, well, I mean, you told us we were going to do this, so we already made plans. Like, and I guess, again, like the kind of attitude earlier that, you know, the government saying like, well, you know, we have to bring in special measures for Christmas because people still need to meet. Like also then obviously made people think, well, you know, it's Christmas, therefore I have to see my family, rather than like actually seeing my family might mean that like I will, you know, inadvertently pass the virus to some of them because I might catch it when I go shopping, you know. Like it was such, it just felt like real mismanagement and real like kind of playing with kind of people's lives for you know, ultimately for like economic gain. But then because Christmas was such a fiasco, and then I think just when people came back to work, like maybe the first day back at work, the 5th of Jan or something, that's when they also introduced a national lockdown. And at that point they said like, no more of the different tiers, no more of the different staff, just everybody's in lockdown now in England. So from the start, like Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland were doing like their own thing. But in England, they introduced the lockdown then, and we're still in that lockdown. So it's taking, and the numbers are getting better, but it's like, it's taken so long to get out of this like period when it was just completely out of control, and where like tons of people were dying, tons of people are still in hospital. Like the case numbers curve is falling like fairly quickly, but hospitalizations obviously not, because like if once you're in hospital, you're not going to recover in a couple of days. So like that just accumulates. I've just been like personally extremely frustrated and extremely angry at how the central government is managing this.
Was Loose Ends by Royal Noble. You are listening to KWNK 97.7 LPFM in Reno, Nevada. Today, we are in conversation with Eric in Japan, Esther in Berlin, Marta in London, and Tony in Mexico City about what COVID has looked and felt like for them in their respective countries around the world. What can you point to that are changes that are maybe like, it's not like directly caused by COVID, but caused maybe by like spending more time by yourself?
I did start woodworking, woodworking is not the right word. like I think that, but I did buy, last year, I did buy a power drill and a handsaw. And yeah, some other like woodworking stuff, and you know, we have in our village, we have the kind of forestry union lumberyard, and so I can go down there and buy whatever wood I want. And they had, so like our village, gave us these like stimulus. I don't know if stimulus would be the right word, but they're like kind of like local support tickets. And basically everybody that lives in the village got like $200 worth of these support tickets that we can only use at, shops in our village that are kind of, signed up to be part of the program. And one of the places was the, that kind of village, the forestry union lumberyard. And so I was like, sweet. I went there and I bought a lot of wood, in my backyard I got some sawhorse brackets and made a kind of a workspace that I can take apart and put together pretty quickly. And on your days off, just if it's sunny and warm, I go back there and make some noise. And it's fun to do that. I made some like kind of racks for my records and CDs and stuff. Before the pandemic, you kind of going out of the village was actually kind of a way of relaxing for me. In this village, everybody knows me. Everybody knows my face. There are only like four non-Japanese people in our village, and I'm kind of a social person. So a lot of I know a lot of people, and which is it's nice. Everybody's very nice, but yeah, it feels like I'm always kind of I have to be on on air or whatever, and so which is it's not bad, but it kind of does get tiring. And sometimes I just want to go somewhere where nobody knows me, and just want to go that kind of a thing. And so going to places like Osaka or Kyoto had always been kind of a relief, a time where I can just go to my friend's pizza place in Kyoto and sit down and have a pizza and a beer and chat with him for a few hours. And so not being able to do that, I think at first I was like, okay, I can't do that. But then I just end up spending more time in this village. And there's a reason why most of the local government employees don't live in the village. most of them commute from, maybe 45 minutes or an hour away. And I think it's because, it gets hard to turn it on and turn it off when you're in the village. You're always kind of on. And, they ask, because everybody's just trying to be nice, but they see if your car is parked there at your house. And then when your car isn't there, they see that your car is not there. And then when your car hasn't been there for a few days, they say, oh, where would you go somewhere? And it's like, they tell you like, oh, Eric, your friend, he's like never at his house. He's never like, he's only home like, four nights a week. I don't know where he is the other three nights. And I was like, I don't know where he is either, but I'm sure he's doing what he wants to do. It kind of gradually wears on you, little by little. So I think that'll be a good aspect of leaving. And unfortunately, the place that I'm moving to is a place that has had a number of COVID cases. It is a city. So I'm moving to a place called Tenri City. And it is a relatively big city. So it makes sense that it has, some cases. But it's had quite a few recently. So hopefully we can get that under control.
Because you're American and stuff, I'm not sure if you avoid these conversations in general, people asking you about like, well, what do you think about what's going on back there? Conversations like that, kind of how they've developed over this past year.
They haven't developed in the sense that it's really been the same conversation the entire year. Oh, Eric, you can't go home to America, can you? It must be tough. And it's like literally like every, like, oh, you can't go back to America, can you? That must be tough. Like, and like, I'm never really literally sure how to respond. You know, I know that they don't mean anything by it. They're just being friendly. They're just, you know, that's, I know that that's it. But like, we had kind of a lot of stuff go down in our family right at the same time, right around the same, like just like a bunch of stuff just like happened. And so it was like this really weekend. I don't know, sorry, Bob. It was a really, really bad weekend. And so like, I remember like my girlfriend and I, we found a temple to like go pray at. It's like this, you know, kind of a famous temple, but way deep in the mountains, really beautiful place. But it's like one where you kind of walk through the temple grounds, and they have a lot of different like, small temples there. So you can, you know, put some coins in and like say a prayer at this one, and then walk to the next one, put some coins in, and say a prayer, and that kind of a thing. And like we wrote their names on some candles and lit those candles. Yeah, it was just a really bad weekend. And then also just kind of not knowing how things are gonna go.
Was Rogue Message by Little Green Monster, which is Eric's music project of many years. You are listening to KWNK 97.7 LPFM in Reno, Nevada. Today, we are in conversation with four people living around the world, reflecting on a year of COVID. Since last March, when I feel like it seemed like there was a more coordinated, you know, everyone was like, okay, how are we going to live with this thing? You know, and people were kind of more or less listening and paying attention. Do you feel like that's changed? Do you feel like people are still even paying attention to those things, you know, and working in local government and stuff, and you know, like being responsible for some of this kind of messaging, you know, how would you reflect on your role in that? And if you feel like it even matters what information people are getting from like an authority, you know?
The numbers will support the argument that people are listening. In 2020, numbers overall have been much higher for the GLA, for Greater London Authority, than the previous years. I think it's you know, most of 2020 has just been COVID, and I think we're seeing that. Yeah, people who are seeing this and people who are engaging, so like engagement numbers in particular, but I guess also impressions. So like people seeing stuff, seeing social media posts, and then engaging with them. And a lot of the engagement measurements we have don't include like comments, because very often comments are just like hostile and like this is not a function of COVID. This has always been the case, because if it's an account for the mayor of London, I mean, a lot of people will just have you know, difficult things to say, like ranging from I disagree all the way to like racism and Islamophobia and terrible stuff. So I think it's there's definitely evidence that people are engaging with these messages. You know, it's harder to assess who are those people. And I know that, for example, when it came to campaigns around vaccine safety, because we saw really high, well, I guess it depends on the context, because like I think in France, like vaccine hesitancy is something like 50% of the population, which is like really unimaginable. But in London in particular, there was like high-ish levels of vaccine hesitancy, and particularly among Black and Asian and minority ethnic Londoners. So a lot of our efforts to talk about like how the vaccines are safe, you know, talking about like what vaccines are, how they work, why you should get one, all of that stuff has been going like very targeted to specific groups. And then we see that that percentage has gone down. So like the hesitancy is lower. So more people are like now believe that the vaccine is safe. So obviously it's not going to be just because we put out some tweets. It's going to be like a kind of, you know, an outcome of a bigger effort. And also just, I guess, you know, when it's a new thing, more people are suspicious of it. Then as it becomes like, you know, then like your mom's had one, your neighbor's had one, like it's going to be a lot easier to be like, oh, it must be fine, because I know people who've had it and it's okay. For like, so we're going into local elections in May. Mayor of London is up for election, as well as London Assembly and like lots of like other like local stuff, and a new candidate for mayor of London just joined the race, and it's somebody running on like a 100% like a kind of anti-COVID mandate, that it, like his whole thing is like COVID is you know a lie and we don't need any restrictions and like lockdown and like all of that. And I'm like, wow. I mean, clearly somebody, like clearly these types of views are getting enough. You know, you have to pay a shit ton of money to be a candidate. I think it's like 10 grand. So obviously there's funders who are interested in seeing that kind of political option being represented. There must be enough people who've like signed whatever thing to like, but like that stuff comes as a shock to me, because again, I feel like, you know, again, we're seeing that like even, you know, even the Conservative government obviously is like in the end, they're taking it seriously. Like they're doing stuff late, but they're doing stuff. Like nobody's saying, you know, like there's no Donald Trump to say, well, actually there's no problem. And it's weird then to see that like that stuff still emerges. Well, there's going to be different like degrees of this, because definitely we've done a lot more work about like countering disinformation and misinformation. So whenever there's, you know, there's a new thing on, like I just posted today on my personal social media about getting a vaccine, And automatically Instagram was like, we saw that your post was about, about COVID, about vaccines. So we've added a link to like, I think it was like World Health Organization or something, that like a lot of stuff, if whatever algorithm figures out that you're posting about these things, they will just add like, oh, this post is about COVID. Here's like a link to legitimate information. So like, that's definitely a change. I don't think I've seen that done in any other context before. And there's definitely a lot more kind of ways that we definitely set up a thing at work where like, if you spot any misinformation, disinformation, you can report it. And then that gets passed on to like a bunch of different social networks, like basically just like, you know, there was a team that met with a bunch of social networks saying, you know, we have to establish this, because then, yeah, that like that's more the kind of puncturing of these bubbles. Like if there's something that's definitely wrong and misleading people, then there's more mechanisms to report it. And I feel like, you know, before I've only seen this in the context of like elections, like if there is like false information being spread about counter candidates, then like that's been a big thing. Like I know that that was a huge deal in the States in the previous, not this one, not this election, the previous election, that was like a big, big, big thing. But we haven't seen this about something that's like medical facts before. And definitely a lot of stuff that we've developed in terms of content for social media from the Greater London Authority has been like, you know, the kind of approach of like, know the facts. These are the facts. Like the fact is that the vaccine was developed through a series of tests and is therefore safe. Like, you know, lots, or like if you wear a mask, the likelihood of you spreading COVID or contracting COVID falls by this much. Like, but then obviously that's just one part of it, because that's the kind of like science versus non-science. But it doesn't touch on the kind of, on the like, but why, and like the kind of the more like the kind of the more emotional arguments that I think speak to people. But there's, you know, so like, that's all really great that we're, you know, talking about facts and like truth and like all of this, but like a lot of the time that doesn't actually work. And there's, I don't think there's like hard evidence for this, but like very often we'll see that like putting some figures in it just to be like, oh, here are the real figure, like that doesn't necessarily change people's minds. Like, and often the stuff that like is a bit more factual, like may not like perform as well because people need a narrative. Like, it's not just like, oh, it's a fact that this happened. Like, you buy into a whole narrative. That's the problem. That like, then even if you hear things to be like, you know, to kind of make little holes in your narrative, that doesn't really, because you're invested in the whole thing, and you're not, even if there's like a little thing and you're like, well, but that's just a little thing, I still have my big structure. If it's not through facts, then it needs to be through the narrative. But then like, we can't say, well, everybody should believe this one narrative, because that's just authoritarianism. Like that doesn't work either.
You are not your God. thoughts, kind regards.
That was Corporate Realness by Dream Nails. You are listening to KWNK 97.7 LPFM in Reno, Nevada. Today, we are in conversation with Eric in Japan, Esther in Berlin, Marta in London, and Tony in Mexico City about what COVID has looked and felt like for them in their respective countries around the world.
When I left the U.S., which was in December of 2019, you know, I thought I'd be back in 6 months to pick up another load of stuff and say what's up to friends and family, you know, for like a week and then head back here. And also I just assumed too that there would be a grip of friends coming to visit me sporadically throughout those months, you know. So, you know, I'd make one trip that way, but two or three friends would at least on separate occasions come to visit me here. And so I'd get this fix, you know, of friends and family and familiarity and all this, because it's a 4.5 hour flight from San Francisco to Mexico City. It's not, or a 2 hour time difference away. Like Mexico City is closer to Reno than New York is, you know? And so like a year and 3 months fast forward later, there's been zero, you know, zero visits, zero of either direction. Right. And so, yeah, you know, I didn't expect that. I didn't expect that when I left. And so there's been ups and downs. You know, for a while I was just super depressed, like, whoa, okay. Like it's been 8 months. I really like to see someone familiar, like that just knows me. Not even just like another American or English speaker. No, just an actual friend, like someone that knows me and gets my humor, has a history. And so for a while I was kind of in this really like bummed out, phase, but I feel like that's kind of started the whole not texting or talking very often with people, because it sometimes just makes me feel worse, you know, like, cool. Yeah. We're talking on the phone, like, but there's no future plan for hanging out. There's no like light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, right now. And so for a few months I kind of was just like super silent, like there was just no communication whatsoever with people. And so luckily though, like I moved here and like you know, now I have a partner and like we live together, and so I'm not totally alone, but I don't know if I would have lasted as long as I have. I would have tried to still held out, like, cause I had just made a move to a new country and I wasn't going to just like go back, you know, but I don't know if I would have lasted as long as I have, if I didn't have like a dog or a partner. Cause then I would have really just been isolated. I would have lived in a city, but really have felt no different than someone living in the middle of a forest by themselves, because I, you know, don't know anyone really. But I often do like daydream about like, what's the first thing I'm going to do, like when I get back to the US for a visit, or what's the first thing I'm going to eat, for example. And what time of year is it? I hope it's this time of year or that time of year, you know, like I have dreams about swimming and like, you know, up in a lake in the Sierras and, you know, eating burritos with friends, you know, like, so maybe that's also a good thing. Maybe that's like what we all kind of need or needed and didn't realize, even if it's hard, like a reality check. A year and 3 months and still counting. Like I often wonder if it'll be like 2 years before I come to visit or have any visitors come here, which is possible, very possible. And that's, yeah, I would never have thought that for sure. In general, pandemic or not, you know, Mexico, at least for me as a person that's, you know, Mexican American, like, Mexico has always been kind of like isolated in that way. You know, we live on the American continent, but, you know, the United States and Mexico, regardless of pandemic, have such a great divide. And I point this specifically out because, you know, these are the two places that I call home. So I feel like it's kind of the same vibe. Like now there's just like this added thing to put on the list of things that divide the country, right? So I can't speak for like how it would feel like how Mexicans feel toward Europe or other countries or how Europeans feel that live here in Mexico. But as far as like the reality or the world that I've grown up in and have been a part of, and also personally dealing with becoming a dual citizen, and becoming even more aware of this like division and divide. You know, I feel like COVID hasn't created any more of that. It's just kind of another addition. I feel like, you know, no one's planning on like going to the US anytime soon. And I feel like Americans, depending on your sense of responsibility or safety or whatever your definitions of those things are coming and going kind of as they please, at least in regards to Mexico. And who knows, maybe they would go other places if the borders were more free to do so. But because Mexico has never closed its borders to anybody, it's kind of a free for all here. It's like currently Mexico is like the Disneyland, I feel like, and everybody's like, cool, I can go to cheap vacation there. So let's go, regardless of the possibility of getting infected or infecting the people that live here. As far as like countries as a whole, I think going back again to what I said, I feel like, yeah, COVID maybe just added to the great divide. I don't think it did anything about joining forces. I think it really just created another stack on the pile of things to separate, at least Mexico and America. But yeah, unfortunately.
It was a day like any other. A day when deeds were done. It was a day like any other, a day when songs were sung. It's all coming back to me, all coming back to me now. It's all coming back to me, all coming back to me now. Everything's coming up, everything's coming up. Everything's coming up, everything's coming up. Of all that we did here, everything's coming up, everything's coming up. Though we have drowned it, it's become compounded. In deaths we are hounded, by regrets we sounded. So it comes haunting, we all are left wanting. As they all surface, we're growing nervous. Just another day without excuse. It's all coming back, all coming back to me now. It's all coming back to me, all coming back to me now. Everything's coming up, everything's coming up. Everything's coming up, everything's coming up.
That was Day Like Any Other by the Dear John Letters. You are listening to KWNK 97.7 LPFM in Reno, Nevada. Today, we are in conversation with four people living around the world, reflecting on a year of COVID.
Work-wise, it feels exactly the same to me. It's easy for me to flip back and forth between the studio and the house. or it just feels kind of similar. I guess though with routine stuff, it does feel a little Groundhog Day-ish, which can be a little like crazy making. I do feel like we just really rarely eat out now. And I've gotten a lot more enthusiastic about cooking and learning to cook more. I've never put like that much focus on cooking in my life and always wanted to be able to do that. And I feel like with this happening, I was kind of forced to do it. And I am kind of grateful for that little part of it. That part of my routines have definitely changed. And just trying to do kind of like home exercise stuff, which I never did. And I feel like that's like helped out with back problems that I have from drawing, and being able to just do some little exercises. So those kind of routines that have changed just because of like not getting enough exercise and needing to nourish myself and not buy things outside. That's been more of a positive change, but I do feel like, I don't know if you feel this at all, but not having this kind of social interaction that I was used to, or these like random meetups, or just being able to go to a bar and have a drink in the evening with someone, those kind of like little things. And also just not realizing that I haven't like danced in a year, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but in some ways I feel like parts of my identity are kind of like slipping away, and maybe some like energy releases that I was used to being able to like, maybe I didn't go dancing like every week or anything, but even if it would happen like once every couple months, it was like this big energy release. And not having that, I'm like, sometimes I get a little bit like, it feels like I'm living in a weird dream state, and especially with the like limited contact, and also just limited contact with strangers. I notice that when I'm outside and there are a lot of people around, I get really awkward and feel really uncomfortable, which I totally never had before. And it's not uncomfortable because I'm like, oh, you have the virus. It's just like, I'm like, oh, a person. And I get kind of like excited and, but also nervous.
And I don't know if this happens to you, but mm-hmm. when I see somebody who I've never met and I've never seen the bottom of their face, my brain will fill in what the bottom of their face looks like. And it's usually in a way to make them look like somebody I do know. So it actually creates like this disorienting effect where I actually feel somehow friendlier and familiar with them, because like my brain is like, well, that they look like so-and-so. And if I do then see them without their mask, it's like, I mean, 99% of the time, it's like, oh, whoa, no, they don't look like that at all. But, you know, it's kind of like your brain fills in details in general. Like if you see half of someone's face, you kind of, you know, you don't assume that they're like two-faced or whatever, that like the other side is some crazy thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I feel like there's a lot of weird, you know, kind of neurological like tricks that end up happening, you know, and it just makes it like a little bit confusing in general.
Yeah, definitely. That's super. I did have a friend who went on like she wasn't sure if it was a date or not, but it kind of seemed like maybe it was a date, but they had never seen each other without the masks on. And then because they had been in a place where they were indoors when they met, and then they took the masks off when they were outside, and it had been a few weeks that she'd seen them indoors with the mask on. So she really built up, I think, an image in her brain of what his face looked like. And I didn't know this. She kept telling me about this like cute guy. So in my brain, like she knew what his whole face looked like. And then she was telling me the story and she's like, yeah, he took the mask off and I just wasn't as good looking as I thought. And I was like, wait, you didn't see him? Like, I just thought because you said he was cute that you hadn't seen his face. And it was so interesting, like the characteristics that she'd morphed in her brain that ended up being different. And she said that he was also like, oh, you look different than I imagined. And she was like, I wonder if we both thought that we were more attractive or like more of our the type or something that I'm attracted to. It was really interesting.
I mean, it does kind of make sense that your brain would sort of fill in the details that you want to see rather than the details exactly. that you don't want to see.
It's really funny. Yeah, it's really, really funny.
Like, if next week, you know, like COVID was kind of over, what do you think, like, what kind of sort of like lessons do you think people like will have learned over the past year?
It's such a funny question because I feel like a part of me wants to say like, oh, I'm going to spend more time, you know, focusing at home and on, you know, I want to go to the States and visit my family more. Or like not get so, I think a big takeaway for me is like realizing, and this isn't just because of COVID stuff. It was because of other personal things that happened, but like realizing that I'm just like so hyper work focused for my whole life. And, my brain like isn't satisfied and like, I can't exist without that bond. And someone close to me passed away and she was the same way. And at the end of her life kind of reneged on it and was like, fuck work, you know, it's terrible. And I just reflected on that a lot during COVID and trying to think about like, gosh, I really, you know, what other things can I focus on too? So to make, or like to be happy and like kind of well balanced in that way and be able to balance all of your relationships, you know, plus work and stuff. And so it's just a theme I've been thinking about. And I'd like to say like, oh, when at least personally, when things go back to normal, I want to be able to keep a good balance and, you know, like, take time to make good dinners at home and like not run out to event, say yes to every event and like be like stretched thin and like running all over the place all the time. But then I know that when I had that feeling during the first lockdown, and then as soon as things were loosened up, I felt this creep in of like all of these things happening again and being really distracted and running around just during the summer and like having the zine fest and having to juggle work and running to the studio every day and like making my lunches and like not prioritizing dinner again. And I saw all these things I'd worked so hard on maintaining and building up during the first lockdown, I saw like just like float right away instantly. And so when you're talking about like the things we're gonna learn, it's so hard for me to be like, wait, am I learning or am I just gonna like get thrown back into the same patterns again once the lockdown is over? And I'm almost like fearful of it ending and not being able to manage things well again. But that's on like a really personal level. I feel like I'm talking personally also because I have so little contact with people that I'm not sure like what the general vibe is. So that's kind of maybe why I'm talking just more personally. Because I feel like I'm in a little bubble.
Today, we were in conversation with Eric in Japan, Esther in Berlin, Marta in London, and Tony in Mexico City. What's particularly disorienting about COVID is that despite all going through this catastrophic experience at pretty much the same time and dealing with many of the same emotions and challenges, we're also isolated from one another. We can talk and vent and try and cope, but not fully. Barriers remain, whether it's a computer screen or a mask or just some distance in the park. We are not fully ourselves. We can approximate closeness, but as long as COVID is with us, true contact is impossible. That's a painful reality to come to terms with, and many of us haven't yet, and perhaps never will. In the meantime, we make do. We find ways to talk, to stay in touch, to not forget about each other. It's possible that the conversations you heard today were nothing new. Like I said at the top of the show,
COVID replicates even as a topic of discussion. It's quite difficult to break out of that rut. But all that aside, I hope that hearing these voices from around the world reminded you that you are not alone. That despite all the conflict and nonsense, we are in this together. Maybe you'll take the opportunity to reach out to someone you know, or even to a stranger, and ask how they are doing. Sure, you've maybe heard it all before, but so what? Try and hear it one more time. You'll miss it when it's gone.
You're leaving us tomorrow.
Thanks for listening. Till next time, this was Soft Power Radio.
What are you happy about?
Oh, it's just that... Oh, I like it here. I don't want to leave.
I just want to ask you some questions about the spaceship.
The count is picked up at 0-10 seconds. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.